This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone, and these are what actual audible dog whistles sound like. They're not pleasant, but not nearly as excruciating as the human ones heard on the Hill this week during the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. A glorious American moment was tainted by the senatorial effluvia expelled by the likes of Senators Tom Cotton.
Do you think most detainees at Guantanamo Bay were mostly terrorists or mostly, I don't know, innocent goat farmers?
And by Ted Cruz.
Let's go back to your favorite topic of this hearing, which is the criminal law cases you had as a district judge, and in particular the cases involving child pornography.
Rick Scott.
She seems to be very soft on sexual predators, people that have harmed our children.
But the most frequent far-right refrain, that Judge Jackson went easy on child sex offenders, debuted in Senator Josh Hawley's Twitter thread. He doubled down in a question to Brown about a ruling.
This is a case where you had an 18-year-old who possessed and distributed hundreds of images of 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds, and you gave him, frankly, a slap on the wrist sentence of 3 months.
Senator,
do you regret it?
What I regret is that in a hearing about my qualifications to be a justice on the Supreme Court, we've spent a lot of time focusing on this small subset of my sentences, and I've tried to explain.
Your nomination turned out to be a testing ground for conspiracy theories and culture war theories.
Judiciary Committee Chairman Dick Durbin of Illinois.
The more bizarre the charges against you and your family, the more I understand the social media scoreboard lit up yesterday. These are not theories that are in the mainstream of America, but they have been presented here as such.
People were doing terrible things in that hearing room, but the child porn canard flogged by Hawley, best known for cheering on the January 6th insurrectionists, was by far the worst.
It's not a new theme for Josh Hawley.
Melissa Gira-Grant has been following this for the New Republic.
He first came on my radar when he was the Attorney General of Missouri. One of his claims then was that sex trafficking, and particularly the trafficking of children, was the fault of the sexual revolution. This is somebody who saw this issue as essentially a culture war talking point. I think that's the same thing that we're seeing right now in these hearings. It's about preying on this very powerful fear.
Even if conservative columnists like, say, Charlie Sykes of The Bulwark or McCarthy of the National Review call him out on bad faith, does it even matter to Hawley?
It's about creating chaos in the course of these hearings, putting out this point that seems to be very important even to the mainstream of the Republican Party right now, marshaling all of that energy into this moment.
Painting Judge Jackson as laissez-faire on child abuse?
It's not very effective at sinking her confirmation. I don't know that it's necessarily even meant to do that. People who would support Hawley, people who might support DeSantis, Trump, all of this sort of wing of the Republican Party, it signals to them, like, I'm on your side. I mean, Hawley started this with a series of tweets, and there's a group, one of their staff has been called to testify by the Senate Judiciary Committee. It's an anti-sex trafficking group adjacent to QAnon, and their leadership helped draw attention to themselves by leveraging the sex trafficking panic about the online store Wayfair from a couple of summers ago.
Yeah, that was when QAnon said that Wayfair was hiding children in cabinets. It was loony.
Completely ludicrous. And yet the CEO and founder of this group, Operation Underground Railroad, his name's Tim Ballard, and used to work for the federal government. He puts up videos online talking about like, well, we don't know if that's true or not, and we'll let law enforcement sort that out. But it is a real issue. The same summer that QAnon was organizing these like Save the Children rallies to mainstream their message, the summer of 2020 ahead of the election, this organization was also doing anti-child sex trafficking rallies the same weekend. And there were lots of people spreading QAnon rhetoric and messaging on their Facebook page, engaging with people who were volunteers for the organization. There was someone who was arrested in connection with January 6th who had just come from holding a fundraiser for this organization and then was later photographed with his feet on Nancy Pelosi's desk. So this is a group that has already, the insurrection notwithstanding, been welcomed into Washington, D.C. anti-sex trafficking circles. To have this hearing be a platform for them is absolutely a hijacking of an incredibly high-profile event. Even this name being advanced signals to this same sort of base that we're going to use your talking points to challenge a potential Supreme Court justice.
Let's pause for a moment at Pizzagate. That helped jumpstart QAnon. That was the conspiracy theory about a sex trafficking ring run by Hillary Clinton and others out of a pizza shop in Washington. Someone showed up at the shop with an assault rifle. January 6th, insurrectionists shouted to the Capitol police officers that the officers were protecting pedophiles. It really seems like the rhetoric can and has incited violent action.
That was what was scariest to me about Pizzagate. It seemed like using this tactic in service of this ridiculous and yet potent conspiracy theory about the Democratic Party. It didn't take very long to get from Pizzagate to January 6th.
Have any of them looked into the actual nature and extent of child sex trafficking in this country?
I mean, the thing that's sort of heartbreaking in this political moment is most people who, as young people, have been in a situation where somebody took advantage of them sexually for something that they needed, whether that was a place to stay or a meal, some other kind of job or safety. That is what sex trafficking looks like for youth in this country. We are not talking about this MAGA fantasy of children being held in the basement of a pizza restaurant in Washington, D.C., which doesn't even have a basement, which was the Pizzagate story.
Donald Trump said, "I know nothing about QAnon." And then he said, "They are strongly against pedophilia, and I agree with that."
You know, when Holly is sort of bringing the specter of child pornography or pedophilia in this moment, you know, it's a callback to that. The reality is many of the people who say that they want to end this, whether that's Holly or Trump, don't even understand what the problem is, but they are tapping into something that actually had a lot of legitimacy before they showed up and tried to bend this rhetoric for their purposes. It is about sort of painting your enemies, not just as like political foes, but as like actually evil people.
Don Moynihan wrote in his Substack that the same actors who constructed the anti-CRT panic are now actively creating a new moral panic, or really invigorating an old one. You see the same actors involved?
Ironically, they have somewhat of a more intersectional understanding of the way that they're bringing these attacks.
How do you mean?
Well, you know, they see that these are interconnected issues, that going after people's fundamental rights, whether that's around gender or sexuality or race, is advantageous for them because they have a group of people to sell on this message. Like, look, if these other people have rights, children are endangered.
You've written about the child abuse rhetoric in Republican messaging, defending the Florida legislation dubbed the Don't Say Gay Bill by opponents because the bill seems to bar any discussion of sexual identity. That is regarded as harmful to children, not sexual activity or sexual advocacy, but merely an acknowledgement of different sorts of sexual identity.
It's written in such a vague way. Ultimately, the judgment call comes down to, do you want to open yourself up to a lawsuit from the most conservative, most homophobic, most transphobic parents in your district? And that's how you have to judge how you're going to conduct yourself in your classroom, your library, your after-school programs. Then DeSantis is trying to throw up this fig leaf of like, no, it doesn't say don't say gay. Where does it say that? Well, of course it doesn't say that. This is part of DeSantis trying to launch himself even onto a larger stage. He now is hiding behind this idea that, well, if you're against this bill, then you must be for endangering children. And as his press secretary put it, you're basically a groomer.
Let's talk about the term groomer, because it's coming up everywhere.
It prohibits the grooming of children by public school teachers. This evil that we're facing is grooming young children for sexual abuse.
Oh my God. When did our public schools, any schools, become what are essentially grooming centers for gender identity radicals?
It's such a pernicious and kind of old-fashioned, in a way, claim to make about gender and sexuality, right? You know, Laura Ingraham specifically sort of updates it when she says schools are, you know, grooming grounds for gender ideology. What it is for them that's scandalous isn't, you know, LGBTQ people broadly, but like trans and gender nonconforming people specifically. And then it becomes a very helpful cudgel to sort of like go after LGBTQ rights overall. But it sounds really scary to be told that if you stand up for LGBTQ rights, if you stand up for your trans students, your trans kids, you essentially are saying child abuse is okay.
Circling back again to Judge Jackson, it seems to me that this marks kind of a great leap forward in the presence of this rhetoric, which was percolating for so long online, but didn't really take up a residence on Capitol Hill.
It is not the first time that people who believe these kinds of things have arrived in Congress, right? We have Marjorie Taylor Greene, also Lauren Boebert, though she says she no longer supports these things. It's also an eerie sort of full circle moment where, you know, Ketanji Brown Jackson was actually a federal judge involved in sentencing the Pizzagate gunman. He got a 4-year jail sentence. She saw that this wasn't just sort of a freak act of violence. She described it as something that was utterly incompatible with our constitutional scheme and rule of law, that this was meant to undermine democracy. And yet, when that judge is up for a Supreme Court seat, this is going to be the thing that they reach for. It's a very high profile showing for people like Hawley and others to mainstream this sort of QAnon panic about pedophilia and child abuse into what should be an incredibly serious and generational shaping process of putting a new judge on the Supreme Court. But this is the trajectory they have been on now for several years.
Melissa, thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Melissa Gira Grant is a staff writer at The New Republic and author of the forthcoming book, A Woman is Against the Law, Sex, Race, and the Limits of Justice in America. Coming up, the power of a sitcom. Servant of the People began on the small screen. Now it commands a global stage. This is On the Media.